youthexpress.org is another service of SLB Radio. It's all youth all the time. And we're adding more and more live participatory programs to that service. And one of them is called H2O. It airs every Tuesday from 4 until 5 o'clock. And I have the two co-hosts here with me. I'm going to ask you each to introduce yourself and if you have anything you'd like to say in terms of shout-outs, acknowledgments, that sort of thing. We'll have you do that.
Okay, so hi, my name is Ashani Lugavelli, and like we mentioned, I'm 16 years old. I'm a junior at North Allegheny, and I'm one of the co-hosts of our talk show H2O here on the Youth Media Express, the center here at SLB, and we have a lot of fun doing that. So I guess the first shout out that I would like to say is for Miss Ronis Freeman from Alcosan, who gave us this opportunity. And I know Anika and I are going to share a lot of shout outs, so I'm sorry for stealing them. But I definitely wanted to say thank you to all the SLB and then YMC staff here. So Alexa, Alex, Joseph, Ty, and then everybody here, they make it such a welcoming place. And it's just such a great center to come to every Tuesday. So those are the people I wanted to say thank you to.
Hello, my name is Anika Reddy. I'm also 16 and a junior at North Allegheny and a co-host on H2O. And yeah, a huge shout out to all of the Youth Media Center staff. Again, Ashani just mentioned Alex, Joseph, Ty, Alexa, everyone that makes, you know, coming here every Tuesday so exciting and a huge highlight of our week.
It's a highlight of my week to listen to the two of you. You might not know how carefully I listen. You really know your topics quite well. And I'd love for the two of you to talk about how you got so interested in the environment, how you choose the topics for the program you're going to host. And I'll let you two kind of break it down for me. It's a pleasure for me to have a couple guests who don't really need me too much. You two have become great conversationalists. I think you started that way, but when I listen to the program week in and week out, it's like, who are these two? They're amazing. So tell me a bit about that.
Yeah, well, for starters, that's super kind of you to think that. We love being here. And I think one of the reasons that we're able to have such great conversations with not just you during these interviews, but with each other is because of how well we're either trained or how great we're able to talk to each other. It's such a great center. So I really love being here. But I guess to start off by answering your first question, which I can do, and then Anika, you can talk a little bit about how we come up with the topics. Anika and I actually started getting interested about environmental science and just the environment as a whole in the beginning of the 7th grade. So now we're in 11th grade, so it's like four years ago.
Almost five, because we're almost done with junior year.
And so I guess kind of how it started was we wanted to do a couple of cleanups, so stream cleanups, because we saw what a huge problem was, that there is so much pollution going on in all these different waterways. So we started an organization called Clean Waterways. So our goal was to clean up waterways, take care of a lot of pollution that's going on. And we started by engaging in other organizations' cleanups, like Allegheny Cleanways. We did a lot with them, mm-hmm. I remember. And we just found it was a very fun way to spend our weekends, and we found so much passion in doing better things for the environment as well as talking about it. So we started doing more programs, internships, and we really wanted to expand, so we did an internship at Alcosan, which ultimately our liaison brought us here, and now we're able to talk even more about environmental advocacy, awareness, and great things about environmental problems, how to be better for the environment, and just solutions like that.
Yeah. And while we're on H2O, we try and do four unique topics every month. And usually one of those topics is called our monthly insights. So we always put a post up on our Instagram that's highlighting a specific topic or concept that we want to talk about for that month, kind of based on the theme of the month. So mm-hmm. in November, we talked about, you know, no food waste November, because you know, Thanksgiving is such a huge thing. Mm-hmm. January, we talked about like snowmelt and runoff. So that's usually one of our episode topics for the month. We kind of dig into what it is and what can you do to kind of combat that. Mm-hmm. But also another huge thing is we want to look at real world things that are going on beyond just, you know, learning definitions and concepts and stuff. So something that we just introduced to our show is called H2O Headlines, where we actually look at real world events that have happened. And I think recently we talked about like sewage overflow.
Yeah.
In two rivers. And so that's something that we've been implementing, where we kind of talk about what it is that's happening. What are we like? What are our thoughts on that? What are we going to see in the future? Mm-hmm. And then I guess a huge part of coming up with topics for our show is Ishani and I kind of just keep up with like environmental science things that are just happening in general. And also because we're engaged in a lot of things like science fair or doing like summer programs and stuff, we also learn a lot of new concepts. So when we come across something that's new, we're like, oh my gosh, this would be so cool to share.
Yeah.
You mentioned science fairs and the projects you do. There are also journalism and lots of sources of information about the environment, including some that is accurate, some that is not. How do you determine from, and this doesn't have to be related to the program itself, although that's part of it. How do you kind of sort through the information you're bombarded with to figure out what's valid and isn't? It's not easy.
Yeah. So I'd say a huge part of that is credible sources. So when Anika and I cite facts or we cite actual statistics, we want to make sure they're backed by reliable, credible sources. So it's almost always going to be the UNEP, which is the United Nations Environmental Protection, like that whole agency, or the US EPA, which is the United States Environmental Protection Agency. So we're always looking for credible sources that we know have done a lot of research in what they're putting out there. So that way we know that we're talking about actual credible information. And then when it comes to just talking about these concepts as a whole and where they come up from, both of us are actually in environmental science, like in school. So a lot of the times when we learn new concepts, whether it be through our programs, our internships, or just through school, a lot of times we learn this information multiple times. So we know what's the most important and best way to explain these comprehensive information, as well as making sure that it's credible, because it is through school and multiple different, you know, ways, methods of learning. So we like to at least be able to usually cite a source for where we're getting our information.
What are you learning in environmental science right now in school?
Actually, that's one of my favorite classes, because I think beginning of the year, it kind of started off of us just talking about just general environmental concepts. What is sustainability? What are some things you can do to help, you know, like keep our environment clean? So things that we're kind of pretty well versed on. But then now we've kind of started to move into more topics that I had literally never even heard of. And so we learned a lot of things about, I guess, kind of buildings, I guess, and what things like infrastructure that we have that actually negatively impacts our environment, things like VOCs, asbestos. We learned about, I don't know if you learned about this, but the sick building syndrome, which I thought was so cool. So usually, you know, school's kind of broken up into a couple different units. And a lot of times our units will be, you know, we'll focus on like aquatic environments, and then we'll focus on like air pollution, and then we'll focus on like humans and the impacts that we have.
So a green building, for example, which I'm guessing you've been exposed to through the class, ways that architects can design buildings so that they either will not impact the environment or sometimes actually have a net benefit on the environment and also create healthier spaces for humans. One of the things, I don't think you've done it yet, but you could have an architect or two join you to talk
so
about
cool.
that on H2O, the weekly podcast. And you don't know what you don't know, so to speak. I certainly didn't know about green architecture until well after graduating college, you know, and it's good that you're exposed to it in high school. Are there other new concepts that have come up during this class or others that were just completely new to you that there must be?
Yeah, I'd say 100%, at least for me, for sure. I assume you've had a very similar experience of where we've learned so many concepts about, there's a lot of times overlap with green infrastructure, watersheds. I know we were definitely talking about the other day, Anika and I. We've learned a lot about overflow, but more specifically, these sustainability practices and carbon offset. A lot of times, these concepts that we're learning about in school and through other organizations like our internships and Clean Water Academy, where I know we gained so much valuable information, that overlaps a lot with our science fair research, where we are able to combine all these things that we've learned to learn even more information. Like, it's just supercharging everything. I feel like we learned so much through our journey.
And I think such a huge thing is environmental science. Like, I mean, science itself is already such a broad topic, but even within that, environmental science is also such a broad topic. And Ashani and I are definitely more focused on kind of like the water side of it. We looked a lot about aquatic environments, wastewater. So yes, we're pretty well versed on that specific part of environmental science, but there's so much more. Yeah. So I know recently in school, we've been kind of talking about things almost like in space. We've been talking about like ozone layers and, you know, how ozone layer depletion happens and stuff. So that's stuff that's very new to me, even though it's still within environmental science.
Mm-hmm. What got you focused on water, do you think?
I think it's honestly just the number of cleanups that we did. Mm-hmm. Once we kind of, I will say, outside of environmental science, Ashani and I are not the best science people.
Oh, yeah.
So once we kind of found that, like, we love environmental science and this is something that we really do want to dig into, I think it's pretty much the first steps that we went to, like Ashani mentioned, was volunteering opportunities. And I think one of our most favorite ones was at Allegheny Cleanways?
Yeah, Allegheny Cleanways.
Yeah, Allegheny Cleanways. And we were literally on a boat in the river, you know, we're like in the trenches finding all these trash, all these tires and all these crazy things. So I think that's kind of our first step as like, we would love to do more of this. And even like where we live, we would love to expand this into our communities because not everybody has the ability to go downtown on a random, you know, Tuesday and go pick up some trash. So why don't you do it right after school in your own home?
One thing that I'll bet was fascinating to you is learning more about watersheds and how huge they are. And there are things that people can do wherever they are because chances are their activity is going to ultimately affect a river or a stream the way a watershed works. Did you learn some things about that?
I think we actually, when we were at Alcosan, we did a summer program that was, we were doing an internship there, but specifically in that internship, there was a two-week summer program where we focused on green infrastructure. And one of the big highlights was actually watersheds, and we got to go visit a few watersheds.
I think it's great to get the opportunity to do that. Ashani is here as well as Anika. They are co-hosts of a program that airs at youthexpress.org Tuesdays from 4 to 5. It's called H2O. I always saw it looks great in writing, but The O is O-H, as in, oh, like you just learned something. Oh, that's what that's all about. You mentioned combined sewer overflow, which has been a problem here in the Pittsburgh area for a long time. However, from my perspective, let's talk about the problem. Do you want to explain what happens? It's kind of gross, but it's important to understand.
So, sure. Well, the reason Anika and I are giggling a little bit is because we have heard the term CSOs, combined sewer overflow, so much over the last year. It's hilarious. But I guess the best place to start is, what is even overflowing in the first place? Like, what's going on? So basically, as we know, wastewater is comprised of three different types of water. So the first is stormwater. That's precipitation. If it's coming out of the sky, it's likely stormwater. And that's Anika's line that I stole. But secondly is gray water. And that's the water from our household appliances, whether it be laundry, washing your dishes, cleaning the floors, mopping, things like that. That is called gray water. Then black water is also water that comes from your house, but this time it includes feces, human waste. So all three of these waters combined, it's wastewater. And it enters a drain. If it's stormwater, enters literally through outside into a drain. And from our house, the gray water and black water enters through a pipe system and ends up at these wastewater treatment plants. But since Pittsburgh, we have such unpredictable weather, we have so much incoming rain, a lot of times our wastewater treatment plants are unable to take in all this excess amount of water. And that's where we see combined sewer overflow, where the sewers are literally overflowing all this water because there's either too much rain happening or way too many people are discharging insane amounts of water. So when the input is more than, you know, they can process for the output, then that's when we have combined sewer overflow.
That's a great explanation.
Yeah, and I was just going to say, it's a huge problem because whenever you have combined sewer overflow, it's not just that rainwater that's overflowing out. It's all of that untreated wastewater that's going back into our environment before it's been treated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's very real. I think one of the other reasons we see it here in this region is an aging infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot. Has been done to improve that infrastructure over the last few years. The idea being, let's keep stormwater from going to sewage plants. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Stormwater generally is just fine to let go directly into a stream. Let's make sure that our sewage plants are used to treat sewage. Mm-hmm. What about gray water, because that is kind of a gray area. Most people, I think, are not doing much yet with gray water. Are there some things to do? I see you smiling.
Yeah.
About.
So the reason I'm smiling about this is because we actually did a science fair project kind of looking at a topic very similar to this. So because gray water is still kind of like infested with whatever outside factors it was used from. So like if you do your dishes with it, whatever was on your dishes is now in that water. But the main thing when it comes to like treating wastewater in general is a huge part of that is trying to get out the feces and the human waste. Whereas gray water obviously doesn't have that. So the project that we looked at actually found that there's three stages to wastewater treatment. And so that third stage is kind of that final stage that takes that water from, okay, this is not harmful, this is harmful from the environment, to no longer being harmful and releasing it back into the river. So we actually found that if you only do the first two stages, which is primary and secondary, that water can still be repurposed to some extent. Yeah. I think a huge thing to highlight is you never want to consume that water. Even after it's gone through tertiary treatment, wastewater treatment plants are not the ones that convert wastewater into drinking water. That's actually different facilities. Mm-hmm. But we did find that if you just do primary and secondary treatment, you can usually repurpose that water just in the environment again. So things like watering your plants or for lawn irrigation, because a lot of the, I guess, like parts that are in that wastewater are things that are like phosphorus and nitrogen and things that can actually be beneficial for plant growth.
Yeah.
So how do we learn, do we have to learn to manage gray water in our own homes, do you think, or to just, and I don't know if this question is even answerable right now, but water for rinsing things, that would be a good example, rinsing your dishes, or the water that is wasted as you're brushing your teeth if you leave the water running. How do, it seems like we'd have to either take an oath and create less of that as a waste at home, or we would have to collect it and do something with it.
So I guess, well, Anika and I actually talk a little bit about what we can do right at home to be more sustainable regarding a bunch of things that you just talked about in something called a ripple round every episode. So those are usually exciting.
Nice.
Yeah, and so we leave our listeners with one thing that they can do that's better for the environment, that's interactive, and it's usually related to the topic of our episode. But to specifically highlight what you were mentioning, as for the leaving your tap running while you're brushing your teeth, I guess the best thing that we would suggest is just don't do that, you know? Like, maybe conserve the water where you can. Our motto for our club, PGH Clean Waterways, is conserve to preserve. So we're conserving water to preserve our environment. And that's one of the best things that you can do. But as for repurposing this water, which is a great question, which is a question that we asked ourselves before basically all 4 years of our science experiments, it's basically what's the best way to repurpose things but be sustainable and feasible. So I'd say for people to learn to be able to repurpose this water, you can do the treatments at home. But a lot of times, even after tertiary treatment, we wouldn't really recommend using that water to rinse your dishes insofar as you'll be eating on these dishes later. And so a lot of times, since even after water goes through wastewater treatment plants, it's just discharged into a river. It's not turned into drinking water. We would suggest that if you want to go through the stages of, you know, using a larger strainer for primary and preliminary, using a membrane-like material like cheesecloth for secondary, or even like a drip system with different layers of sediments like sand, gravel, charcoal, and then going through tertiary UV radiation and then chlorine treatment, maybe even Elodia and duckweed, which is our project this year, you can go through those stages and use that water for irrigation, mopping your floors, maybe anything that's not for consumption. And
tell me about your project for this year. What is it called?
Oh, this year was so exciting. Yes. Do you want to talk about it?
So pretty much every year of Science Fair, we are always something wastewater related. Every time a judge comes by, we're like, hey, if you hear wastewater, it's probably us.
Yeah.
But a huge thing that we kind of wanted to expand on, like, our very first ever project that we did, which was literally just looking at the efficiency of each stage of wastewater treatment. And a huge thing that we found is that tertiary treatment is so expensive. Mm-hmm. And usually facilities will either use chlorine or UV treatment. And UV is a lot more expensive than chlorine, but both require a lot of upkeep and, like, a lot of investing into that. Mm-hmm. And that's actually why a lot of places, even just in the U.S., don't mandate tertiary treatment because it is so expensive. And even beyond just the U.S., there's a lot of countries that aren't as industrialized as we are. So you can only believe that, like, they may be not even doing secondary treatment because it's so expensive. So our goal this year was to find an alternative for tertiary treatment that is just as good or even better than tertiary treatment is. So we actually looked to aquatic life. And so something I always say is, let's try and help the environment help the environment.
Yeah, that was awesome.
So we did a little research and we found that there was two plants, Lemna minor, which is also known as duckweed, and then Elodia, which actually help a lot with reducing ocean acidification. So we wanted to see, could we maybe transfer those abilities to wastewater?
Yeah, and overall, just to, you know, spoiler alert for our project, you can. And so for countries like India, which is kind of where we got the inspiration to do our project, that doesn't mandate tertiary treatment at all across the whole country, and then more than half of the states in the United States that don't mandate tertiary treatment, this is an amazing alternative because we found that it substantially reduces total suspended solids, which is obviously the floating stuff that's in your water, but also microplastics, which we know has carcinogenic effects. And we've seen so much research over the past few years on how bad microplastics can be. But when Anika said help the environment, the decomposing of these plants, as well as just the production of nitrogen, phosphorus, and improving the pH levels that these plants do in the water, actually promotes and creates a better environment for more plants to grow. So it's literally helping the environment help the environment.
Yeah, it's fascinating. We're almost out of time. I knew this was going to go really quickly.
Yeah.
First, is there anything else that you wanted to mention that we didn't get a chance to talk about?
Ooh.
There's probably tons. I'm going to mention that you can follow H2O on Instagram at PGH_cleanwaterways. And you can tune in at youthexpress.org Tuesdays from 4 to 5. You can even call and talk to these talented women about what it is that they're doing. Anything else about the program you want to mention?
Something I think I'd love to mention is we really want to hear what our listeners want us to, like, learn about and talk about. So if you have a topic or an idea that you'd like us to kind of dig deeper into, you can always, you know, find our contact on our website, or you can comment on our post, DM us on Instagram. We love, you know, being able to interact with, like, it's amazing to see that, like, people are interested in the same thing that we're interested in. And we also love to, you know, learn beyond what we just know. So if you have a topic that you think is really cool and that you'd love to hear us learn more about, we would love to.
Yeah, and then the last thing I guess I'd have to say is if people want to get involved in the community, our website is a great place to start. It's pghcleanwaterways.org. We have all the information to join our cleanups, to start your own cleanup. We have the paperwork, the materials. We will provide you with everything. We do want to help everybody conserve to preserve. So I guess everybody can make a difference, you know? So definitely try to be more sustainable.
I'm really proud that you're both spending time at our Youth Media Center and that you're creating radio Tuesday afternoons that is impactful and making a difference.
Thank you
for doing that. Make sure you tune in. It's Tuesdays 4 to 5 to H2O.